The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. All discussion is limited to publicly available information and should not be interpreted as legal, professional, or financial advice. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license nor provide any financial services. Before making investment decisions, you should obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rocks from Ensemble, and I'm thrilled to be bringing to you the podcast Engine Room. It's devoted entirely to the practices or the business of financial advice. Over the course of the next many months, we're going to be interviewing Australia's best independent boutique advice firms, their practice managers, their GMs, on what environment is conducive to being a best practice, how they keep talent, how they attract talent, and what the future of financial advice is. It's the Engine Room podcast. Welcome aboard.
If you're one of the many advisors who told us, I don't need another good idea, I need support to actually implement, then this is for you. We have launched Ensemble Progress, a professional development membership built for advisors who want momentum, not just inspiration. With protected time to implement, peer-led accountability, and practitioners sharing what's actually working, Ensemble Progress helps you turn intention into consistent, visible results. Instead of the important work getting pushed to next quarter, it gets done. Find out more at ensemble.com/membership.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Engine Room. It's great to kick off the new year with a really bright, bubbly practice led by a charismatic man. That's a lot of pressure already. So I'm hoping that that's probably getting the sweat dripping off his January brow. But today we're joined by the founder of Sheffield Financial, Angus Taylor. Welcome to the Engine Room.
Thanks so much for having me, Andrew. And yeah, just to point out, big fan of what you guys do here. Anyone that gets around the industry, I'll support every day. So well done. And second thing is, I've got a 4-month-old son. So I was up quite early wrestling with him. So just go easy on me today.
Well, the first part of his answer was exactly what we told him he had to say, Kieran.
Exactly.
So the second, a sleep-deprived podcast makes for the best one. So we'll be finding, and look, congratulations, obviously, being a father. It's part of one of the rich tapestries of life. But if we wind that all back, we had a bit of a chat beforehand, and there's some similarities. You're from the country, and then you kind of had quite an unusual, I would say, sort of pathway to starting your financial planning practice, but you did it all quite early. So maybe give us a bit of an idea of how you got into financial planning, the beginnings.
Wow, that's a long story. I guess mine was a bit different from the average person. It's not like I left uni and go, okay, or left school and go, okay, I want to be a financial planner. Working on the farm, coming off the farm, working in about 20 different occupations throughout my career. It was basically a story of trial and error of what do I want to do after trialing all these different occupations.
What kind of ones? Throw some at us.
Yeah, I'll chuck a couple out there. Starting out like construction, laboring, landscaping, did a bit of acting actually. I worked as a garbo for a little bit. So a lot of very different areas. I was working in the mines for quite a bit as well, with explosives. That was an interesting part of my career.
So, that was one of the ones. So you were on the farm, and then coming from a farm, and you're probably a jack of all trades. You know, a lot of farmers, you're pretty good at quite a few things, but you haven't worked it out yet. The acting thing is this is new, but we come back on that one. But so when you went into the mines, was that an outback, or is that local, or was it FIFO?
Yeah, so I just got out of university and jumped into the corporate world, doing a marketing role, low pay, high stress, long hours. And then the opportunity came up for a job in the mines, high pay, working half the year. You know, it was a bit of a no-brainer at the time.
And when did you believe that your passion was blowing things up?
In my opinion, that was the funnest part of the mines, is the best occupation you could have there was the blowing things up. So, from the start, but over time, you know, my love for the job and, I thought this was the way to building wealth and, being financially set up in life. But looking around, I just realized, you know, that that wasn't for me after a bit.
So I suppose just unpacking that for a second.
Yeah.
We've probably got some listeners on the line who are life insurance specialists, and they're already squalling their quoting software for Powder Monkey as far as an occupation code and what the loading would be.
Yeah.
But this, so you were flying in for a month and a month off, or because, you know, I've got relatives who've done that, and it is hard to do it for a long time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a bit of a young person's game. So I had the best roster, 1 week on, 1 week off.
And where was the mine?
Central Queensland.
Right. You flew out of Brisbane.
Yeah, Brisbane, yep. Exactly. But, you know, being on a remote place in Central Queensland just wasn't my sort of deal in the end.
And so how many years did you do it for?
I only did it for just a bit over 1 year.
Yep. So you've worked out what the lifestyle what you'd done corporate before.
Yeah.
What was next for you?
Yeah, exactly. It was actually a bit of an impulse move. So I realized I wanted to be working with people. I really enjoyed money. And so there was just one logical next step for me, jump on a plane to London.
Right. Okay. And I notice here that you played a bit of rugby when you're at university. Is that something you pursued when you're over there? Is that how you got your social life, or was it mainly just the bars like every other Australian?
No, rugby's always played a big part in my career, in my life. Sorry. And I actually this year had given it up. I say that every year, but I think this is the year. A lot of goods come from playing rugby, from meeting new people. All my first clients in Sydney were from the rugby club. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a saying. I've always kind of professed that you've got to be interested in other people, but you've also got to be interesting to them as well.
Yeah.
And then whether it's, netball, basketball, tennis, whatever it is, successful financial planners in particular, if they're building their own business, generally have those touch points in a community. And it's also good for you as well to blow off steam.
100%. Like, financial planning I love, but you need a life outside of that.
And in the United Kingdom, you actually got into a financial services. Was that your first financial services gig was in the UK?
Yeah, spot on. That was an easy journey. You could just imagine that I got to London. I'm like, great, I'm going to get a job in finance. I put in my resume to a lot of companies and a lot of no's. Well,
the explosive thing wasn't a natural segue into inheritance tax and things like
that. Yeah, you'd think that would give me a foot in the door, but absolutely not. It was pretty difficult to find a job, to the point where I had to walk into a company and go, look, don't pay me. Just take me on, give me a fair go, and let's make a call after 3 months if it's working.
And was that the Thornton and Baines?
Yeah, correct.
Ensemble Progress is for advisors who want real momentum, not just inspiration. Find out more at ensemble.com/membership.
And what was your role there, your first role?
Yeah. So I worked under financial planners. We're very heavy in the estate planning world, just because they've got inheritance tax over there. So a lot of around that sort of tax mitigation and building wealth. Just working under senior advisors.
And your time there came to an end. Was that correspond with your visa, or was it?
No, I did have longer there. I could have stayed as long as I want, but it's sort of, I got homesick, and I looked long term, and where I wanted to be was Australia. I wanted to be working in financial planning in Australia, not in the UK.
So you've made your way back to Australia, and from my amateur stalking on LinkedIn, you've hooked up with the BT group. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's the stock standard for the industry.
Well, it used to be,
yeah.
And we're going to talk later on about professional year and
yeah.
you, where you are now.
Yeah.
But it used to be stock standard. We took for granted that these big institutions were great sort of training grounds, which sort of don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
But you were there, and what was your role there?
So we were basically the online financial advisors. It was the Wealth Connect division. A few people probably listening to this are having a giggle to themselves. Yeah, they put forward a pretty aggressive program, which unfortunately didn't work out. But basically, people would go into branches and they could link up with a financial advisor online.
And that was in sort of 2015, 16, was it?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yep.
Yeah. So I suppose from a timing perspective, that was right as FOFA's teeth was really coming to the fore and risk management started being more important than growth. And so you're probably right. You're probably, you know, what was your trigger event for exiting that business?
Yeah, well said. You could start to feel that in the corporate world was the over-focus on compliance, about it stopped being sort of about the client and started to be more about the business and sort of how to protect and safeguard the business, etc. I just did not feel right there in regards to we were generally utilizing only one provider's products, which is BT. There was a few issues with the sort of management style there, etc. And at the end of the day, you know, I still had a lot of energy in me, and I just knew sort of the next step was just to go out on my own.
So how old were you when you went out on your own?
Oh, God.
Can you put God in the links, Kieran? It's always good. It's always good to get an early one in for the year.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's for those listening, you can pick your own.
Yeah.
Broad church.
Yeah, that's it. Keep it broad. Let's say 28.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, interesting time. And were you married at the time or?
No, I was early days. I was actually single at the time. And
probably a good time to kick off your own business, right? You've got a high propensity to work and a low downside, really, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And, actually, I think I was just starting, my partner will kill me this, but probably just starting dating my partner at that time.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. And that business is the same said business you got today, Sheffield Financial.
Yep.
What's in the name?
Oh, it's a pretty lame story, to be honest with you.
It's all right. We can edit it out if we think it's lame, can't we, Kieran? But we probably won't.
Yeah, perfect. At the time when we were starting it, it was me and a friend at the time, and we had this other mortgage broking business, which was Sheffield Mortgage Broking. And at the time, we thought it would be a great connection. We would have Sheffield Financial, and we could work together as a team. After a month of creating the name, we pretty much split ways. So, and I just stuck with it ever since. And I like it. You know, it's sort of like the Waratahs. You know, once you're with a team, you got to sort of stick with it.
Yeah, no, it's a solid name. It's a solid name. And I'm reading your website, which I'm reliably informed as we speak is being revamped. So
yeah,
for everyone now, just hitting the URLs. And you know, you do play a bit to the fact that you've got some solution for FIFO. So, you know, which is an interesting context. I'm going to ask you in a second about sort of the types of clients that you've got now and where you're going. But what are the because I don't get that many FIFO specialists interviewing them. What are a couple of traits that you think you need to have as a financial planner to deal with people in FIFO occupations?
Yeah, so not only FIFO, but a lot of those jobs, I feel that people want to come in and speak to somebody that can communicate on their level, keep things simple. As soon as you start to get technical or complex, you lose the client. So basically, how can you help them? How can you keep it simple? How can you keep it interactive?
And I think my definition when I was a practitioner, my definition of FIFO were we had a reasonable amount of long haul pilots.
Yeah.
And so when they were back at home, they were intense and you got so many detailed emails and then they'd just disappear for a week and a half, 2 weeks and then they'd come back again. And I imagine that this the same cadence.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you've always got to make note of when they're going back to site and when they're back, you know, when they're back home and time off, they've got all the time in the world for you.
You're almost cringe.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you don't note when they're going back to work, you're like, did this client just ghost me?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, your DocuSign, mate, you've got the time limit on the DocuSign.
Yeah,
it's like, 14 days. Yeah, okay. And just rounding it yourself, you mentioned that you're a father and you've been playing sport. But what else do you do outside of financial services?
Great question. Rugby is obviously a big one. We're down at the Woollahra Rugby Club most weekends, supporting the boys there. Outside of that, I love sports. So if it's on a golf club, if it's out surfing, if it's tennis, whatever it is, I'll be out there doing it.
Awesome. Well, it's exactly what I'd expect from someone who grew up in Gundawindi, which is a pretty sport mad a town. So, yeah. Look, just switching gears, and you know, I think late last year we were speaking to your licensee on the licensee podcast, and I asked about some up and coming progressive practices, and you mentioned a bunch of others, and then we eventually got to yours. Now we actually threw yours. And just to, Sheffield Financial, maybe start with what are the types of clients that you've tailored your offering to? You're 8 years in now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, where have you landed as far as the type of clients that you like?
Yeah. I guess starting out, we haven't had the luxury of being picky with clients. So it was basically... How can we help any client that sort of steps on our door? Now we do have the luxury. Instead of just focusing in one segment of client, what we're trying to do now is build out different servicing offers. So basically, if a client does come to us, what servicing offer would be best for them?
Give us, like, do you mean is it a strategy-based offer, or is it a client capacity-based offer? How do you chop them up?
Yeah, great. So let's say probably someone who's not a fit for us right now, potentially a fit for us in the future. We have a more basic package. We can work with them, say, if it's some guidance around budgeting, emergency funds, doing the risks with them. Then we've got more of a holistic growth package. So for, you know, more established families who are growing, who need a bit more hands-on superannuation, investments, etc. And the third package we're working on is more of a sort of complex high net worth type of client.
And the first cohort, that's basically your incubation.
Yeah.
And all your clients receivable.
Yeah.
How are you managing the, because, you know, a lot of advisors have this because of just the nature of more clients than there are advisors. Do you use any products or software? Do you recommend people going on a particular types of money management programs or anything along those lines?
Great question. So software is a big one for us. That's our focus, is how can we work with a lot more clients than your typical practice? How can we service a lot more clients, have those relationships without us sort of being at full capacity? So it would be more around the sort of technology base on sort of how do we, you know, get a client into our technology? How do we automate everything? How do we hold that relationship without taking up all our time?
And are you using all the tools that your licensee is offering for that?
Yes and no. I think I went in a bit dark originally and just used my own tools, etc. And then now we've got quite a strong relationship with our licensee. And the more that they show me around their software, their tools, they're basically doing everything that I was doing, but better.
Yeah, I think, when I was chatting with Lifespan, that's one of their... You know, they were meeting the market. They were looking to help with that incubator kind of program. So then the next cohort of clients are, what's the percentage? Because, I mean, you've got wealthy families is one aspect. Is that a retail offering or a wholesale offering?
Retail at the moment.
Yep.
But we're looking at the wholesale option. But no, retail is, we just want to build a real smooth process, basically. Okay.
Yeah. And, you intimated things like life insurance.
Yep.
Is that something that you all do in your practice, or are you aiming to have someone who's a specialist, or?
I think all. Yeah. So again, we've built that process out. So for an advisor to say do up a financial plan, is, you know, hands on less than sort of 30 minutes. So to provide this advice shouldn't be too hard for the advisor. So if it's you know, not too hard for the advisor, everyone should be doing it, in my opinion.
Yeah, okay. And the families that, so how many families, first of all, you're the principal in the practice, and yeah, historically you've been the tip of the spear taking on and onboarding the people. You've recently, over the last couple of years, taken on some PYs as well.
Yeah.
I suppose first question is, why and what's their role in the business?
Yeah. So we are growing and we're on a massive recruitment process at the moment. So sorry for any unsolicited recruitment on this podcast. But basically, as you mentioned and alluded to before, advisors are hard to come by. If we could, we would have, you know, as many advisors as we could. But, you know, looking at from a commercial point of view, it made a lot of sense to focus more on the PY market. Let's get in as many sort of young, up and coming people as possible, get them in, train them the Sheffield way, teach them how to do it, and work with them and grow with them over time.
And that's Nick and Tom, yeah? They're your two PYs. And I suppose, can I ask you, are you confident around their success and your success because you're getting organically new clients, or have you got a referral partnership? What gives you the confidence that you're going to continue to get those new business, the new clients into your business?
Yeah, I think it's both. You know, I'm a pretty social guy. I like networking and have built some really great referral partners already, to the point where this year we've been sort of turning down and sort of turning sort of business away just because we don't have the sort of capacity, and that's why we're focusing so much on our processes at the moment. So regarding new clients coming in, you know, that's not an issue. It's a matter of, you know, how do I get the new Tom and Nick up and running? How do we do it the most efficient way? So I feel very strongly that, you know, everyone's going to succeed together and grow together.
And when you say you've got some successful referral partnerships, it's always been, for some planners, it's been something that's come very natural. Yeah. For others, it's been very elusive.
Yeah.
What are the kinds of partnerships that you have, and why do you think they work?
Yeah, great. One successful one we've had is from sort of mortgage brokers and buyer's agents. Basically, we get a heckload of referrals from them, and that's just based around the risk side. Is just now they've got their new investment property, they've got a lot more debt on, speak to Angus at Sheffield Financial to sort out the risk. Very streamlined referrals process, which works for everyone. So yeah, I think just going out and meeting people and having those conversations, seeing how you can help other businesses and they can help you.
I'm reading your website, and, you know, we can help you move into your dream home is one of the first things you say.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's very aligned with those people who are buyer's advocates and couples looking to do that. And once they move to that dream home, they now also have that not so dreamy debt.
Yeah.
Which triggers all those conversations. Is that kind of how it works?
Exactly. And they're the sort of type of clients that are very open-minded. You know, they've made some really big financial decisions in their life. They understand the process because they've dealt with mortgage brokers, buyer's agents, solicitors. So they know how the service industry works. And, you know, we're just the next piece of the puzzle.
And on your website, you also say you don't have to be wealthy to get financial advice. But the reality is, in the most recent survey, that it's about $4,800 for upfront advice is the average across all of Australia from, I think it's an advisor ratings report.
Yep.
That's not nothing. So
yeah.
how do you feel confident in articulating the value, and how are you teaching your two PYs to also have that confidence?
Yeah, I'm fortunate enough. They've already got the confidence. They don't need me. I actually get it from them at times. But it's a bit of a no-brainer when you're sitting in front of a client. We offer just a complimentary meeting with all clients, and it's basically, you know, just showing them the value and having those conversations. It's a real easy process for us.
And as far as the engine room of your business, how many retained families do you have currently, and what sort of a good organic year look like?
I'm not great at the numbers. And new year, that's the plan, is to go through all the numbers and strategically work forwards. But look, I had a quick look on, one of our platforms the other day. I think there was about, 500 clients.
Yep. And they fall into those broad cohorts of your incubator, your wealth.
The growth one
and the family.
Exactly. And we have a lot of those clients, a very low touch.
Yeah. So you've done scoped advice, life insurance scoped advice, some cash flow.
Exactly.
And then you're waiting for a life event or a trigger event or an inheritance or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was kind of the basis of a lot of people's financial planning practice over the years.
Yeah.
And what's your tech stack? You mentioned that you've tried to build a few things. Where are you sitting now?
Yeah. The great thing about being a small team is we can bring on new technology. If it doesn't work, get rid of it, change direction of the ship at any stage. We're big fans of PlutoSoft at the moment for our advice. We invest quite heavily in virtual staff members. We use a number of other softwares. Are you familiar with HubSpot?
Yep.
Yeah.
So when you say virtual staff members, are you talking about people in different countries, or are you talking about robots?
Philippines, yeah.
Philippines. Okay, cool. Well, I've got a background in that as well.
Yeah.
I also have a background and we build robots as well. So these days, 2 years ago, I never asked that question, Kieran, did I? These days, I'm asking about whether or not you're building robots, or whether you're doing that. So, and how many? And so, because you've got Samantha here in Sydney, is that right?
Correct.
And she's like client service manager.
Yeah.
And she reports into a couple of people in the Philippines. Is that right?
Yeah.
Or correct. They report to her.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they're how long have you been doing that for?
I've had Lelaine with me from the start.
Years.
Yeah.
Hey, long tenure.
Yeah. And she's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I could have not done half the things without her. She's
listening.
Yeah.
She's down the barrel of the camera. She's listening. We know.
She knows my brain better than I do.
And also, she's just spent her 13-month pay about it over Christmas. There you go.
We were speaking to her about that the other day.
There you go.
Yeah. And we've got Astrid, who's been with us coming up to a year at the moment. And again, just, you know, people who can who are really proficient and can get in there and get the job done.
Well, the fact that you know them, you know their names, probably answers my next question.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for planners who haven't yet or are investigating working with offshore people? What are your couple of tips?
One that I find is very useful for my offshore team is videos. I've got Loom always on my computer. So whenever I come to a task, I shoot a video on that task, I save it in a file. If they ever need to refer back to how to do that task, it's all there.
So you built an intranet, have you?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we probably don't need to give a link for Loom, but I've been using Loom for years. And what it means is that you don't have to do repetitive training, right?
Exactly.
And do you communicate via the Microsoft Teams platform? Is that sort of the...
No, on WhatsApp, we have two team meetings every week and individual meeting every week as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And the business at the moment, as far as bringing on new clients, given that you've got two PYs and yourself, you're still the bottleneck. Is that right? Of taking on new clients and reviewing clients?
Yeah, I would say yeah, myself. I am the bottleneck.
He just gave me that glance. Is this meant to be an interview, not interrogation?
Yeah. I know that. I'm just waiting. I can't wait until a few months from now they'll be up and running and be able to just deal with everything themselves. So.
And in relation to the PY people, a common sort of worry is once someone gets to their PY sort of stage, they might leave, right?
Yeah.
So you've obviously built sort of a bit of a rapport with them.
Yeah.
But when they get to that stage, are you going to allocate them some some clients look after or some of those ones in incubation? What's going to be something they're listening right now? Yeah. So I'm talking to both of you guys.
Yeah.
What are kind of some of the carrots that you're going to offer for their sort of development for them to want to go, yep, let's double down?
Yeah, so we do have pretty open and honest conversations every week. And, you know, where do you want to be in 5 years, 10 years? Like, what do you want out of the business? How do you want to grow the business? I want them to feel a part of it the whole time. Yeah. And you're right. We still need to have those conversations in the future on how things are going to look.
Yeah. And look, we're going to talk in a second about sort of how you're managing your people and your teams and whatnot. And I suppose just before we go on there, in relation to, you know, this is quite a big platform, a lot of people listening, not just advice, but you've got a few of your suppliers. You're clearly well-liked by your licensee, hence they referred you through to yours truly.
Yeah.
But as far as like investments and platforms, do you outrun an SMA or an MDA? And is there any platforms that you believe are helping you grow your business?
I keep it pretty simple at the moment. I don't use – we obviously have the platforms. We work with a lot of the big providers, but we are building out our own model portfolios at the moment. However, with that being said, Tom, who's very keen on the investing background, he's really pushing for a few different investment strategies that you just mentioned before. So that is something we're building out now at the moment for clients, and more the higher end clients.
Yeah, and is that something that you would co-create with your licensee, or is that something that you're looking to sort of build and use their regulatory platform?
So yeah, we always get feedback from our licensee, and like, to be frank, these, you know, they've been doing it for, you know, a long time. They've got, you know, the people there with all different expertise. I'd be stupid not to, you know, get input from them. So look, at the end of the day, we are putting forwards what we believe a good solution is, and we're basically getting feedback from them.
So the way in which your business is structured, this is your own business, and do you have any other investors in the business set currently?
No.
Have you ever acquired any business? Have you done any of the M&A?
No.
Is that something that so what are your priorities? So if I'm asking you now for next year, yeah. Are your priorities predominantly to grow more organic new business, to acquire a book of business, to bring in new advisors as well as PYs? Like, what's your go-forward strategy?
Yeah, I think we're fortunate enough that there's a lot of clients out there, a lot of people who want advice. So regarding buying business, I think we can pretty well get that off the table. It's not necessary. We want to continue to grow aggressively. So more advisors, more PY staff, but that's probably the hard part we're trying to overcome now, is where do we find the right people for the job?
Well, I'll ask you, I mean, you've got two PYs, but why is an advisor joining you?
I'm
an advisor. Why am I joining you? What are the things that you hope are going to light my candle and to want to be with you for medium term to long term?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I'll say it this way. Do you want to be a chess piece or a chess player? And what I mean by that is we want to work with an advisor who will be putting input, who wants to grow in the company, be a part of it. Not just somebody who comes in, does a 9-to-5 and gets in, gets out.
So if we've got any Bobby Fishers out there, we've got a willing participant there. Yeah. Now, in relation to running your operations and your business, do you have a cadence during the week or a weekly rhythm of meetings, or how do you time manage yourself and your team?
Yeah. Andrew, I'm probably a pretty bad person to ask about that. And the reason I say that is I've been running pretty hard lately. But my plan this year is, how do I get that good rhythm where I'm not just back to back all the time? I'm really hoping Nick and Tom, you know, them hitting their straps now will be taking a lot of that sort of workflow off my plate. In regards to the team, I like to meet with the team at least once a week. We do our WIP, our work in progress, and run through basically what they're working on, how we can help get ideas from them, how can we make the business better. And we also do the two team meetings every week as well.
So a couple of questions I'm unpacking here. One was you meet regarding work in progress, which is operational, but then the other one is you said you talk about how to grow the business and do that.
Yeah.
So do you have a forum for doing that? Do you subscribe to any sort of business coaching or any philosophy?
That's something I will be doing this year, is a lot more on that side. Now that we're starting to, get up there with our business growth and become quite a substantial beast at the moment.
Yeah, well, I can't advise you to do it enough. I mean, I did it over the last 25 years, and it's single-handedly the reason, the difference between where I am now and where I would have been.
Yeah.
I don't think you're devoid of ideas or energy.
Yeah.
But what they do is get you to prioritize things and hold you to account. It's
pretty exactly. Cool. And speaking to, other business owners, who are quite successful, is they've all highly recommended it, and I know I need to do it, so it is on my hit list.
And that comes down to then, as you build a team, you've got to give agency and get those meeting rhythms going well. So how do you celebrate wins in the business?
Oh, look, that's a big focus.
He just pushed off the back fence then, didn't he? You could see he's running from the side screen.
Yeah. So, and again, I want to make our business about that. Like, you got to enjoy coming to work. So if we do get a win, let's celebrate. I probably didn't tell you, Andrew, I would like to get the team over here after to meet you. But basically we go out, we have team breakfasts. We have those about every month. We also, whenever we have, somebody graduating or somebody achieving something great, we organize a bit of a lunch or a dinner and all go out and celebrate that win.
And so brings me to my other question. You may have kind of answered it, but what's the office look like? I mean, we're in Sydney and Pitt Street. You're just up the road. You walked down here today, which is great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Is your team in your office?
No, I keep it pretty flexible. We all try and get in sort of two, three times a week. But, work from home, if you've got something come up, we're pretty flexible work from home to the point where, if the business is and everything's going really well, if you want to have a beach day, go for it.
And what about your clients? How do they like to be engaged? We're now, COVID's done, right? So we're getting to the new normal from clients. Yeah. As a percentage of your client reviews, what percentage want face-to-face versus online?
99% all online. Right. I've got a couple of my older clients who are pre-COVID clients who do like that sort of face-to-face, but I'm pretty much 99% online. It just, and again, it creates efficiencies for the business. If I'm in the car 2-3 hours a day traveling to and from meetings, I just lose so much time where I could be speaking to clients.
Look, I understand. A question without notice. What do you think? I mean, if you've basically fought a couple of years pre-COVID and you've a couple of years in COVID and a couple of years post-COVID, it feels like it's almost divided into 3/3, to be honest, for you. Have you seen a downtick or an uptick in them referring friends, like Net Promoter, as far as because you're not potentially, stereotypically, you're not in front of them and you're not in their environment?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're fortunate enough, as I said, marketing is going to be a big focus this year for us, but we're fortunate enough, we get a lot of client referrals.
From your referral partnership?
And from clients themselves, yeah.
And how do you measure that?
We track it in HubSpot, but again, and a lot of the time we don't even push for these referrals. It's, hey, can you speak to my brother or my sister or my friend about this, a work colleague about this? We get it a heck load, which is great. It means we're doing something right.
Many moons ago, I was lead advisor, and in order to scale, I had to sort of make myself less relevant with clients and less popular with clients. What's your couple of year plan on how you're going to be able to move those relationships and those referrals to your team as you grow? And what would you like to be doing in 3 years' time as the leader of this business?
Yeah. So I've had those conversations with Nick and Tom already, who, you know, put up their hands. They're keen. They're happy to sort of take over, take the lead on a lot of these clients. But you might feel the same way. I've got that loyalty to the clients. I started on this journey with them. I don't want to sort of say goodbye to them. So,
I've got a great story about that.
Yeah,
I thought that they thought I was the bee's knees when I introduced them to my their advisors. Yeah. About 2 years later, they would sort of go, "Thanks, mate." You know, when someone forgets your name.
Yeah, you're probably right. You know, Nick and Tom are so capable. The ones that the clients get to meet them, they'll be like, wish we got introduced years ago. But it's going to be hard saying goodbye to any clients. But I need to have some serious thoughts on how I can sort of take a step back from the client facing and more focus on how we can grow the business.
So you've got 500 people in your books, but how many have to do the annual opt-in? How many are on that kind of cadence?
Yeah, great question. I think I've got about 100, bit over 100.
Yeah.
And that includes if it's partners as well.
Yep, gotcha. And so you've got, you know, 5 to 6 reviews that have to go out per month if you're spacing them throughout the year.
Yeah.
You've got your team, preparing those annual reviews. You're no doubt having a meeting a minimum of once a year, you know, talking to them.
Absolutely.
You intimated that you're hiring a new marketing person who from a talent pool very close to home, and I shared the fact that my wife also did my marketing for many moons, and you're really looking to professionalize and broaden and grow your marketing.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Second of all, if you get the extra clients, how are you going to – what tweaks are you going to put in your engine room?
Yeah, I think it's a lot about the feel. As we're growing as a business, I'm getting a lot of questions and everything's in my head at the moment. How do I get everything sort of out of my head and to the clients so they can understand who we are, what we stand for? As we said, you know, our website's not that great at the moment. We want to be a lot more personable. We want people to come to us directly and understand who we are and, you know, how we can add value. And it's something that we've been bad at saying to the world. We're good at talking the talk. We're good at walking the walk, but bad at talking the talk.
And are you inferring the fact that, you know, when you want to go out and meet the market these days, it's not just on your website, it's social media, it's engagement.
Exactly.
Being where the prospective prospects are.
Yeah.
Is that going to form part of your marketing initiative next year to run more social media, to do those kinds of things? And if so, where are you going to find the time?
Yeah. So again, our expert marketing manager who's going to come on board, aka Helen, she will be driving this initiative quite hard. And you're spot on. My time is there's not much of it. And even worse is I'm horrible when it comes to marketing. You know, my spelling, just the way I look at things, it looks fine to me, but Helen will be able to pick up, you know, 1,000 different things wrong with it. So, again, you know, I've pulled the pin on it and I go, I need a professional come in and, you know, take this whole role over and lead the charge for me.
With your business, as your Sydney base, you said you wanted to grow.
Yeah.
Are you in the you're looking to grow by marrying up and going, well, I'm going to get new organic clients, you know, Cerebus Paribus. If you took on 50 new clients here 2 years in a row, who are on retainer, that doubles the size of your retained business.
Yeah.
If you've got, sounds like you've got 200, 250 scoped advice clients, have you got like a defined program of how to engage them to become full service? What are sort of the funnels towards the Holy Grail, which is those retained clients and then ultimately those families?
Yeah. So the great thing is we've got the relationships with all these clients already. And you know, they like us as a business. It's not that we've come in there and aggressively try to push something on them. You know, we're just taking it step by step with them, and they know who we are. So we do have in Plutosoft a little pop-up task that comes every year or different dates for different clients. That reminds us basically, hey, reach out to this client, see where they're at with this. So basically we do have a lot of opportunities to re-engage with the clients and basically upservice them.
And when did you move to Plutosoft?
Ooh, it would have been from the start.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was one of those ones I used and just haven't looked back.
Yeah, I've got a couple of people I've interviewed are using Plutosoft. I've got a couple of good friends that have recently moved to Plutosoft, and I think everyone's looking to have the whole the whole client problem. And they've had a reasonable crack at it, and it's also, you know, it was developed by a practicing advisor.
So,
hopefully is get you closer to it. In relation to the, you've been in the same licensee.
Yeah.
I've got to ask, what are some of the things that you like about your licensee community? And what's the industry do well, and what do you think it could improve in?
Yeah. So starting out, I had some pretty shocking experiences with licensees. Then I got referred to Lifespan, and I've been with them for quite a while now, and they've been great, to be honest with you, without sort of talking them up too much, you know.
What makes them great?
Yeah, I'll tell you a story. I had a bit of an issue, I think it was a couple of years ago. They were like, Gus, on the phone, both Ardino and Savali, let's go down, grab a beer at the pub and, you know, have a talk through. You know, for them just to drop what they're doing and, you know, in a notice, and me being, you know, quite a small business at this stage meant a lot for me. And, you know, we sat down and just talked it out and, you know, put a plan in place. They've got a common sense approach. You know how compliance can strangle a lot of businesses. So yes, they have a common sense approach to the compliance area, which is good. So it helps us to keep working with more clients instead of being hung up on the small details.
Yeah. And I think I'm seeing an evolution towards, AFSLs trying to be business partners.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of reasons they want to do that. One is it's a competitive market.
Yeah.
Running an admin compliance service is a race to the bottom when it comes to fees.
Yeah.
But having a, you know, a bunch of practices inside your stable that are getting bigger, that are becoming more successful is quite alluring.
Yeah. They give you all the resources to grow. You know, there's some really great people there. Lisa, Pierre, Alan. I don't know what Alan does, but he's always there.
Maybe Alan, we could ask that in the links. That's a frequently asked question. Yeah, I'm just joking, Alan.
Yeah, joking, Alan.
and I'm looking at Plutosoft. Do you use the Client Hub?
The Client Hub.
Yeah, on Plutosoft for your clients. Like, do you have a client facing portal for your business?
Look, I did invest in that in the early days.
Yeah.
But the take up of clients, it wasn't through Plutosoft. This was a different sort of online portal. The take up wasn't as much as I was hoping.
Sometimes you care more than they do. You know?
Yeah. And the fees, and, you know, clients weren't that interested. So I scrapped that idea pretty early. But again, you know, different clients want different things. So it could be a talking point in the future.
Yeah, okay. And if I'm talking about the industry, I mean you must be in your mid-30s now. That's roughly where you are. There's not that many young people coming through the industry. For someone for practice your size to have two PYs is probably, you know, a punchy outlier. There's no real universities out there saying here's a specific degree. What are some of the, I suppose if you're out there advertising the industry, Why would a young person join in financial planning?
Yeah, it's funny enough. This has been my sort of area of topic that I keep bringing up with Lifespan is, why aren't we at the universities? Why don't we have one of those booths selling the, you know, the financial advice? Like, and for anyone who's considering getting into financial advice, do it. You know, this is a great industry to be in. It's a great area. It is a bit upsetting when you hear, you know, the numbers that are coming through. You know, I'd put it into ChatGPT before, you know, comparing against mortgage brokers and accountants and stuff. It's a joke how fast we're growing our advisor numbers. But, you know, it's an area we need to be doing better as an industry. And I think that is going to be a big focus for mine this year is, how do we, you know, get the good name of, you know, financial advice out there to the world?
Well, I was at a session just recently, and Deloitte's put out a study, and I think Iris might have been for Iris or X-Plan for everyone. And yet again, clients of finance planners rated the house down, love their finance planner. People who don't have a finance planner don't really rate them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of been the reality of it. So it's almost one at a time we're winning people over.
Yeah.
And there's a significant under-advised sort of cohort in Australia. And let's play a game. So, you know, if you had the ability to repeal, roll back, or create legislation, what would be some of the levers you'd pull in a sort of a perfect world?
Yeah, nice, Andrew. I love putting me on the spot there with the high-level political stuff. Look, I'm just a simple financial advisor, business owner, but what I would say is I sort of do like what they've done with the educational standards and raising them up. That's great, but I think it's just been a bit aggressive, too fast, too quick. I would like to see related degrees and not just financial
planners.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you've got people who've done economics and laws and a great diploma in financial planning and then masters, and they're like, yeah, not good enough.
Yeah, right? I'm like, these are super educated people, and they would be great in our industry, but, you know, no, the regulators are knocking them back because they don't have a specific degree.
Yeah. I've done ethics twice.
Yeah.
And in the second time, I'm like, well, that carriage car can just kill all the fuckers. Like, at the end of the day, that ethical dilemma, I'm like, how many times do I have to be asked? Yeah, kill them all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. It's, sometimes I scratch my head, and when a new sort of rule comes out, you know, that, you know, they love bringing out a sort of new rule. But, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully the brains that be know what they're doing.
Yeah, look, the flip side of that, or the counter argument, is that demand's never been greater. The valuation of a financial planning business now is firmly in the remit of profit or EBITDA, to be sort of technical. The willingness of both domestic and foreign capital to invest in our quite geopolitically stable income streams is there. So although it might be painful to start a financial planning business, if you get your engine room right, if you can run your people, and if you've got a bit of a plan, then it is a get rich slow scheme, but you will get rich if you play your cards right.
So
that's my take anyway. Well,
yeah, and that's it. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. Always having that long term approach, and that's what I've always had. Even when I'm speaking with clients, is I'm not ever looking at making a quick buck. How do I do the right thing and get the reward at the end of the day?
Oh, there's no quick bucks with financial planning.
Yeah.
It's and I think, you know, if you look at go all the way back to your background, your parents' background, you're in farming. It's one of the biggest risk-taking environments you can ever have. You're literally betting the farm on whether you're going to rain, you know. So you've kind of managed to do that. In relation to thank you. I did put you on the spot politically.
All good.
Yeah. And look, the related degree thing, I think it was not only your licensee, it might have been Keith Cullen from WT is also, like, he's just enraged that related degree exists, and it just really crimps the industry, given that so everyone's seeing from the same hymn book, right?
Yeah.
Um, We'll put you on the spot for this, and it is now time dated. If I'm coming and chatting to you in January 2028, what does Sheffield look like as a business?
We will be a completely different beast by then, hopefully. Look, we want to continue this growth rate. There's a lot of opportunity out there. We want to embrace automation, potentially AI a lot more. I want, a lot of advisors, and I want to be growing a lot of advisors and younger advisors up through the ranks. We want to be out there in the industry, supporting the industry and giving back. What they've given us is amazing. And, ideally we want to give back and really stand for something and grow going forwards.
Well, look, this is an ensemble podcast, and as it turns out, I'm the CEO of Ensemble, as well as being a part-time Mick, you're in the golf clap there, as well as being running the podcast here. And what we'd really encourage, if you're listening to this and, what Angus says resonates, is we're coming to you this year. We've got lots of labs. We've got lots of experiences where we're physically coming out to the states and the regions. Obviously I'd hope that you'd attend a couple of those areas.
Absolutely.
But also it'll be environments where we're going to get people to roll their sleeves up and actually do some implementation.
Yeah.
The worst of the legislative change is probably behind us.
Yeah.
I think the dust has settled.
Yeah.
The people are now picking themselves up and looking at growth, predominantly organic as well as M&A. We're hoping that promotes the positive evolution of financial advice. And with that, I'd like to thank you for spending the time today for thugging it out without any sleep last night. What's your youngest name?
Callie.
Shout out to Callie. If you're listening to this in 15 years' time,
the big man.
He was whinging about you then. He's probably still whinging about you now. So
yeah.
And a shout out to your family as well. So on behalf of Ensemble, thank you very much for your time.
No, thank you so much for having us on today, and looking forward to more events, networking, whatever you guys are putting out there. Looking forward to it.
Cheers, mate. And as always, cheers, Kieran. Thanks, guys.
Legend, Kieran.